Welcome into another episode of a Colorado Craft Podcast by Mile High Bourbon and Rye. My name is Zach, and I am here at the Hofbräu in Westminster today, joined by a really awesome guest, Andy Lindahl. Andy, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, poor Zach. We've been trying to do this for, 2 years now, and finally... Man.
It feels like it.
You were going to be up here. We're at the Hofbräu in Westminster, where I do my show sometimes, and you were going to be here 2 weeks ago, and we had audio problems, and we had to bail on you.
Yeah.
Went running down the street.
Oh, man. I got to say, though, driving back just up to my house from my work, and you and your partner, Nate, calling into your own show in order to do it on the road was honestly some of the best radio I've listened to.
Well, we appreciate it. It didn't feel like that at the moment. That was not fun, but you know what? That's radio, right?
Yeah. So, hey, you got to roll with the punches.
I thought
right?
You were going to think, man, this guy's got to be lying to me. We're going to do it in the summer, and then my pug broke his jaw. You were going to come over. It stinks because I had a bourbon I wanted you to try. I wanted you to try some of the Stranahan Snowflake.
Oh, yeah.
Since you're such a connoisseur, because I've got some of the old bottles from when Rob was doing it. Whiskey Rob.
Okay,
Rob.
See, yeah.
Why am I forgetting his last name? But anyway, Rob's one of my good buddies,
yeah.
Even though I can't remember his last name. But no, Whiskey Rob had run the brand for a while. He's now with Metallica, and he's running their bottles.
Yep.
And so I just wanted you to try that because obviously I don't know who the new distiller is over there now, but I've got some from back in the day. Rob Diedrich's old
stuff was
always
okay.
Good stuff. So.
It was racking my brain trying to come up with the name too, and I just couldn't do it. But yeah, we'll still have to plan a time to do that for sure because I'll want to try those. I still haven't managed to secure a bottle of Snowflake for myself.
Ever?
Never been able to score one. I've tried it at the distillery. It's awesome, but just never been able to bring a bottle home.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know. I don't know how you feel about it. I really love bourbon, and it was funny. I got on to Stranahan's. I partnered with them one fall with my show when I was over at KOA.
Okay.
And so that's how I got to know Rob and a few of his marketing people. They've all kind of since left, and I think Stranahan's has had kind of a little bit of a turnover there, but it's still one of my favorite brands. I still love to make. The drink that they got me on at the time was a mule, but they called it a Colorado mule where they just subbed out the whiskey for the vodka.
Yeah.
Right? And so I still, as a matter of fact, I had one over the weekend because with the original yellow label Stranahan's because I love it, but it is tough. As much as I love the Snowflake, what is it, like 100 bottles, $100 a bottle now?
It's something like that, and you've got people camped out at the distillery two nights before the actual release. They make a big production out of it. They've got like fire pits and live music and all of that, but I can't get in line that early. I've got other things to do.
You never know. Like, if you get in line, I had one of the bottles later that wasn't Rob's, and I didn't love it quite as much.
Yeah.
It wasn't one... That I got lucky with the 2 years I went with Rob. Both bottles I felt were worth paying the money for.
Yep.
You know what I mean? He had one the first year that I had it. I want to say, I'm trying to rack my brain for the years, but it's probably the 2017 edition of it. God, it was so good.
Yeah.
I told him he ought to make it, you know, just all that. This should just be a standard
make that
bottle.
And make it a standard, yeah.
But I guess that ruins the fun of it being a Snowflake.
That's fair, yeah. One of a kind type of situation with the Snowflake. Yeah, I can see not wanting to change that, but... No, they're fun releases for sure, and everybody's always said each one that they've had, and I got to try last year, my wife and I got to do a tasting at the distillery with the three previous years
wow.
of Snowflakes, so they still had a couple of them just to pour at the bar.
What did you think of them?
I was impressed. There's a couple, actually, they had a single barrel select at the distillery when we went, which was barrel proof and all of that. I actually thought that one was better than the Snowflakes we tried, and I took a bottle of that home with me because it was absolutely phenomenal.
Now, is that white label, right? I think it's the white label,
the Snowflake, single barrel? No, it was still a yellow label
it
for
was?
That one.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
There's a couple of, I'm trying to think which one the white label might be. There's the Mountain Angel that's in the tube with its white,
right.
But... I'm trying to think what other one might have a white label besides the Snowflake.
It might be their 10-year. I don't know.
Yeah,
may
that'd
not
be
even
the
mass
Angel.
Production.
Yeah.
See, it isn't. You bring it up right there, though. You never know about the Snowflakes until you taste them.
Yep, exactly.
So,
yeah. And the single barrel select they had there was phenomenal. So just,
some are really hot. Like
yep.
Again, I like it right in the middle. I don't want too much burn.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel. I don't want it to taste like moonshine, you know what I mean?
Right,
so.
No. It depends. Some of the barrel strength stuff I really like. My personal favorite is to get stuff that even is a little bit too hot because add a couple of drops of water into it and kind of figure out where it opens perfectly for you. That's definitely my favorite is to be able to do that with them. So I like some of the barrel proof stuff.
Are you a big, I don't mean to interview you on your own podcast, but I always get curious about because I feel like I'm new to the bourbon game. I'd say I'm probably a 10-year appreciator of bourbon. I didn't drink a lot till, like I said, It was 2015 when I hooked up with Stranahan, so probably even 9 years at this point.
Okay.
Wouldn't even be 10 years till this fall. And I just bourbon was just something that, again, stung because I was always having some of the cheaper mass marketed stuff. And
yeah,
getting to know these folks is what really helped me kind of get a better appreciation for bourbon and whiskey and all that. But I really like a lot of the Colorado brands, which is why I'm curious. Are you, like, I meet some people that don't seem to like Colorado at all. I think our water makes better product, frankly, than some of the Kentucky ones that I taste.
Yeah.
But
well, and honestly, with just how intense they get as far as filtering out the water, adding back in minerals, you can kind of nail that same water production. So I personally agree. I think the Rocky Mountain Melt-Off makes better whiskey, and a couple of brands kind of run with that. Woody Creek up in, I can't think of the town right now, but up in the mountains, that's one of the big things they promote is it's the Rocky Mountain Melt, that, and that's what you're drinking. So I do think that that affects it a lot. I actually think Colorado's doing phenomenal. They're making a strong name for themselves recently, especially.
Yeah, I love Old Elk. One of my favorite places to go and visit is the 10th Mountain Distillery that's right there in the Vail Village.
Oh, yeah.
I play lacrosse. Obviously, you're a Mammoth fan, and I know you want to chat about that, but I play lacrosse, and they had a Vail Shootout there every year, so they have ties to the lacrosse community. So
yeah.
And I just think they've got a great little spot there where you can go, and they've always got some pre-made Manhattans, which are phenomenal.
Yep.
Old Elk's in Fort Collins. I'm trying to think of some of the other local ones. Have you had the Coors one, the Five Trails?
I haven't had that yet, actually.
All right, I got a bottle of that. You'll have to try that. It was an interesting one. I'm not going to tell you. I hate to say it because a friend of mine gave it to me, and so I'm not complaining about a free bottle of bourbon by any stretch. But of all the Colorado ones, I don't know that it would beat the other three that I'd already had. I had no idea Coors was making one, though.
I remember when they first came out with it, and it was kind of a big deal. And a couple of the people that I talked to were not as impressed with it as other stuff out of Colorado. But, I mean, it's also Coors. They're big brewery. I'm not surprised that their first foray into distilling wasn't, you know, instantly knocking down the doors of every whiskey producer saying, hey, we know what we're doing and we've arrived. I think they could probably do well, but it's one I'm definitely interested to try, but it's not, there's a lot of other bottles in the state that I think I would put ahead of it, unless same type of thing, I got it, you know, as a gift or got to sample it for free somewhere.
Where do you fall with, like, Breckenridge? I don't mind Breckenridge, but I don't necessarily love all the Breckenridge line. Their Bronco ones, I got the orange and blue bottle. Remember when they did the Bronco collab? I think Jake Plummer, my friend Romy Bean, who works at Channel 4, helped Reggie Rivers on one, I think.
Okay.
And I think, I've never told Romy this, I think Romy and Reggie did the orange, and Jake and another former cheerleader, I think it was Kimberly that I used to know too, did the blue bottle, the blue label.
Yeah.
I think I like the blue better than the orange.
Well, and they keep doing so this year they did it again, and they do a release, I believe every year is what they've been running with. And this year it was Randy Gratishar was the orange, and Ed McCaffrey was the blue. I could have that backwards. And honestly, like, I sat down and I thought the orange was better, and then the next day I went back and just sampled a little bit out of each one. I was like, well, actually, no, I think I like the blue one better. It was kind of hard to pick. But I'm on the same boat with Breck. I think they do a really good job. I think their baseline is a solid, affordable whiskey. But, they've got some, like, more limited releases and stuff that I think does a much better job of, you know, really showcasing what they're capable of.
You know, another one I tried was Rocker. Have you had Rocker yet? The one in Littleton, downtown Littleton?
Yep.
I hope they do okay. They were right by my guys at Proudsell's Barbecue. Unfortunately, had to close this past year. I guess the Walmart and King Supers being able to sell seasonings and stuff crushed their business, which sucks. But Rocker there in Littleton, I had one day, and it was all right, I remember. I want to go back, give it another taste so it really sticks with me. What about Laws?
Laws is the reason I started the website and then ended up getting into the podcasting from there. Yeah. So it was actually, this year will be 10 years of doing this. And I was just getting into kind of whiskeys and bourbons and everything. Being young, not knowing a whole lot about it, I was under the impression bourbon was only from Kentucky at the time. And in comes Laws, sales rep, because I worked at a liquor store at the time. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're making a Colorado bourbon. I'm like, I didn't even know that. So first, I get to learn that. And it was only a 2-year bottle at the time, but I sampled it. And I remember thinking, like, it definitely was, like, you could tell it was younger than some of the other ones I got to try working at the store. But it had a quality to it that if I could go back and repurchase that same bottle, I absolutely would. That original release from them, because there was just something that was almost magical about it. And I was like, you know what? I think I want to start talking more, trying to, you know, get the name of Colorado out there, because that led me to trying Elkins Distilling in Estes Park, and that led me to Spring 44, and that led me to Spirit Hound, and that led me to, you know, and just kind of keep going down that path. I'm like, there's over 100 distilleries in the state right now, and so it's, I definitely credit with kind of being the, let's do this, this sounds like a cool thing to do, and they're still to this day one of my top favorite brands in the state.
Yeah, so didn't the Laws guy, didn't their head distiller split off from Stranahan's? I thought he was like one of the original, he might have predated Diedrich, and maybe Diedrich took over for him.
I believe so. That's the path that I understand was taken, or Rob and Al Laws were together at Stranahan's.
Okay, that could be it too.
I'm not 100%, but yeah, for sure Laws branched out from Stranahan's and then started their own.
It's funny, you bring up Elkins. Did you ever meet McShan?
Oh, yeah.
McShan. So I went in there one day. I was my family was out of town. They always go out of town after Christmas, which is why we were trying to do it 2 weeks ago to free up my schedule. But they go out of town to Cleveland, and I had nothing to do, and the Broncos had their season ended, so I just drove up to Estes on my own.
Yep.
Because I'd always heard about it, but you couldn't get anywhere around here.
Yeah.
And I met McShan at the distillery, and he sat there and told me the story of this being his grandpa's recipe, and so I've kept in touch with McShan, and it's been awesome. That was one of the coolest, just fun little nights that I happened into. That I was at the distillery and bought a few of his bottles and all that. And then I just hope, I know things have been a little, I guess, weird since the accident they had up there, unfortunately.
But it has been,
and I
know. He's
still cranking, isn't he?
So the last I understand, and I haven't actually spoken to McShan in a while, I should reach back out to him, because him and I were, we were pretty close for a bit. But my understanding is Spring 44 is actually distilling for them right now.
Okay.
So they were able to take the same recipe, use another distillery's stills, and produce their product. Things definitely are still a little kind of weird, but they're still putting out a great product. So
yeah, cool, they had an apple one. I want to say an apple cinnamon one someone had me try, you know?
Yeah.
And he had told me, it was funny because he did tell me it was moonshine. Did he tell you that story? It's his grandpa's recipe is for moonshine.
Yep.
But he said, he's from Alabama, and we don't drink. He goes, you guys don't drink the clear liquor here. I had to make it brown, so that's why I put it in barrels and change the color and all that. So.
Yeah, heard the same thing. And, I mean, they're definitely, he's such an awesome guy to talk to. He was just, like, willing to talk about all sorts of stuff, you know, not going into overly detailed specifics, but the history of the recipe, how they're aging the things. They started off with wood chips instead of going into wood barrels.
Okay.
And then I remember when they had their first single barrel bourbon release, and as soon as I saw that advertised, I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta go get that, because you guys haven't been aging. It's been in, like, small barrels or with wood chips and doing all sorts of stuff like that, and I thought it was really cool when they finally released that. So they're actually fun enough story. Before the incident at the distillery, when it was on the lake there, that's where my wife and I had our wedding reception.
Oh, I could see that. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's beautiful.
Gorgeous views of the mountains and everything in the background. We've got a cool print of, like, silhouettes of us with the mountain in the background, and you can kind of see the lake, and it just absolutely was awesome. And obviously great spirits to enjoy for everybody at the wedding.
You know what I wish, and maybe your podcast can be the driving force of this. I wish Whiskey X would come through. Did you ever go to the Whiskey X when they had that going for a while? Did you ever take part in that? I don't even remember how I found it. Again, in the media, you'll get emailed things from PR people all the time. And so the first Whiskey X I went to, it basically is like the Great American Beer Festival.
Okay.
But it was whiskey.
Yep.
And they had a lot of the national brands, but plenty of Colorado brands, plenty of smaller ones. Like, I tasted Whistle Pig for the first time there, and you could get a Pappy Van Winkle, just very small little tasters, but nonetheless, at least taste what the top brands are like and all that. And I just wish we could get, I feel like it's not, the last time that it came through that I was able to go to it, it was 2 years at that Air and Space Museum in Lowry.
Okay.
Do you know where that is?
Yep.
And then they moved it to, now they want to call it the Slaughterhouse District, but it literally was in this dilapidated building that was supposed to be hip. You know, one of those old warehouses off I-70 near the Purina plant.
Oh, no,
and literally,
exactly,
like, stuff's falling off walls. And I'm like, this is not, it doesn't feel healthy. Someone's
going to
get the whiskey.
Bad.
But it was a very cool event. And I don't know. It might have come through. Maybe I've been too busy to catch it. But I just thought it was so cool because you could go try for like $50. You could try all the whiskey in the world you could want to.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'd definitely check that out if it does still come through. I haven't seen it, but I don't get reached out to by the PR people yet, so hopefully that'll start happening
but
soon.
You're heavy in our community, obviously. I'm not as near deep in the bourbon community as you are. And that tells me that they're part of the problem. If you guys don't know about it, then they're hitting the wrong people.
Yeah, so I'll have to check that out and see if that's something that's going on. I've got a few other people that do stuff like this, podcast, social media. Maybe they have some idea on if that's still happening or not.
Or maybe we just need to put our own together. I don't know.
You know what, though? That's actually a thing that I'm going to try to do. I don't know if I'll be able to put it together this year, but it is I want to get a Colorado distillery tasting event to happen. See if I can get just as many people as possible come up. And, you know, you might not get some of the brands that are the crazy rare sots like the Pappy Van Winkles and stuff, but if you can get a bunch of Colorados and try them all together, really help promote all that, I think would be an awesome event. There's a couple that are kind of like it. There was a Colorado Distillery Week down in the Springs with a lot of the more southern distilleries put on by Colorado Spirits Collective. And then actually in Estes Park, they do the Rocky Mountain Craft Spirits Fest each year. And that usually has a pretty big turnout too. So might have to partner up with some of them, see if I can't.
Maybe I need to go up to a couple of those. I love 291 out of the Springs too. Now again, that one's a little bit on the pricier side, but I have a friend down there. She and her husband are old Air Force vets, and they always bring me a bottle here and there when they want to come talk Broncos. But I've had a couple of the Bad Guys. I've had a couple of the regular labels. I don't remember all the names, but I know the Bad Guys especially were really good. Really good.
If you're familiar with any of the sports podcasts, Locked On Avalanche is one.
Okay.
They invited me on to one of their shows over the summer after we won the Stanley Cup. And one of the things they had me do was pair players with whiskeys. And so the 291 Bad Guy was my choice for Cale McCarr. Many reasons for it, but not the least of which is all the booze that Seattle gives to him all the time.
Yeah.
I went ahead and, I was like, he's labeled a bad guy, but really it's good stuff. And so
I like that. Yep. That's perfect, because I was going to say, Cale is not a bad guy.
No,
Seattle needs to get over it.
Yeah, they really do.
They don't seem to remember breaking our guy's neck, though.
Oh, I know.
There,
it's
right?
crazy, so. Right? They no memory on that at all, but
Cogliano got stretchered off practically, but let's boo Cale.
Right, exactly. So I do want to talk a little bit kind of about your journey through sports, but before I do that, I just want to take a quick moment and we'll talk about the sponsor for this podcast. Before we continue on with today's episode, I just want to be sure to tell you about the sponsor of the show, Centennial Cuts. Centennial Cuts is family-raised beef. It's family-owned. It's based out of Southeast Colorado, and it is the best beef that you will ever have. Hands down. Steaks, roasts, ground beef that is absolutely phenomenal, as well as all beef hot dogs, beef jerky. I've got two packs of that right in front of me here. A Garden of the Gods sweet barbecue flavor and a Telluride teriyaki, which I was going to open specifically for this ad read and then messed up my video recording. So it is already open and I did just get to try it. But savory sweet ginger flavored is what it says on the package. And let me tell you, that is a extremely accurate. My gosh, like some beef jerky that you eat, just it's a little too, I don't know, tough to chew through or anything like this. This is somehow extremely tender, overly flavorful, and still the beef jerky that you would expect to have. Can't recommend it enough. Absolutely phenomenal. If you would like to get some of this for yourself, head over to centennialcuts.com. You can shop all of their products on there, including bundles, pet treats, individual cuts, anything that you would like. Beef jerky, which, my goodness, this teriyaki flavor is so good. Make sure you pick up one of those. I also really like their spicy ones. And when you place your order on centennialcuts.com, use promo code MHBR, Mile High Bourbon and Rye, MHBR. You'll save 10% off your order. Have it shipped directly to your door. Thank you, Centennial Cuts, for sponsoring. Again, everybody, be sure to go check out centennialcuts.com. Check them out on social media. Learn all about them. The Larson family has been producing great beef for a very long time, and you won't be disappointed in it. Centennialcuts.com, promo code MHBR. Thank you very much to them. And now, back to today's episode. So, Andy, you've been doing sports radio since 2000?
Yeah. So, 2000, it was wild. So, technically, gosh, how does it work? 2000, I was employed. 99, I was an intern at KOA. My very first day on the job at KOA. So, I'm really rambling for you. 98, yeah. I had an overnight job at the Fan. That was technically my very first job in the business.
Okay.
I would bartend from like 5, because I was bartending through college at this little Bennigan's off Hamden and Wadsworth. It was a really fun job. But I bartend there and go in like from 5 until midnight, then I leave and go to the Fan and get there by 1 a.m. and stay there till 5 in the morning. And my job literally was at every top of the hour, you hit one button, gave the ID,
yep.
And then I had to try to stay awake the rest of the night because it was hard. But I got hired at KOA in 2000, but before that in 99, my first day on the job, the only reason why that's significant is I started with Dave Logan and Scott Hastings on a show called The Zoo, and they were literally in Miami still after beating the Falcons. I started the Monday after they won the Super Bowl against the Falcons.
Yep.
And that's why I'll never forget that. And I interned a couple of semesters there, and then, yeah, I got hired. I guess they technically got hired in fall 99 there, but 2000 was my first real year as an employed radio person.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So you've covered, obviously, Colorado sports for quite a long time, and if I'm not mistaken, your current show is like one of the highest rated afternoon shows in the market, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for good reason too, but
I appreciate it. Some people don't always feel that way.
I'm sure there's plenty that
you
chime in.
You do social media, there's always someone.
Oh
right?
Yeah, absolutely. But the other big one too is, and you kind of touched on it as well, I am a Mammoth fan. My wife and I really enjoy going to the games. We've been big fans of them. You're the voice of the Mammoth as well. How'd you end up kind of going from intern, first day on the job right after the Broncos win the Super Bowl, to the spot you're in now and really being the voice of the Mammoth?
I got lucky in a way. So try to give you the quickest version possible. I get on with Dave and Scott, and you know, Scott Hastings in particular is like a family member to me. Dave and Scott were both very good to me, but Scott really took an interest in me because it was in the fall of 99. The guy that was the producer of their show quit because he was not given a promotion to the Broncos producing job, which meant he would have traveled with the team and
would have
basically been in charge of the broadcast and all that. So he quits. They're kind of shorthanded, needing a producer for the afternoon show.
Yep.
His name is Ivan Sikalski. Great, great guy. Really, he had run my spring internship prior to me coming on in the fall. He was really helpful, really taught me a lot, went on to great things at ESPN, ran a lot of their baseball broadcasts.
Okay.
So Ivan's a fantastic guy, but he felt slighted, so he quit. And I needed extra money because I was doing the Lou from Littleton show. And so I told them, well, I'll just do both shows so you guys figure it out because I could use the extra cash.
Yeah.
Because I was an hourly employee and I'd cut back on my bartending at this point. And so after a couple of months of working with Scott, Dave was coaching his high school football. Scott basically went to management and said, hire that guy. Just keep Andy as a producer. That's who I want.
Okay.
And Dave signed off on it after working with me for the month of December because his football team, I think, got into the playoffs. I don't think he won the championship that year. He was at A West.
Okay.
But anyway, Dave signed off on it at the end of the year. So basically, I thought I was on my route to radio management when you're a producer. You don't normally move over to airtime.
Yeah.
So I started, after a couple years, Mark Schlereth retired from the Broncos. He wanted to get into radio. He gets over to our sister station, 760. He wanted to do a sports show. He wanted me to come over there and work with him. And basically, there's some behind-the-scenes politics, but my boss wanted me to move over and work with Schlereth, so I decided to do that.
Okay.
It was hard to leave Dave and Scott in particular, because, again, he's still one of my closest friends to this day. But I started working with Stink there, and the trick for me getting on to air was, you know, Stink, by the time we hired him, he was already at ESPN, and he had to do the show NFL Live every day. So oftentimes, Stink would think he was going to be on the show the whole time, and we'd find out, we were on at 2 o'clock, we'd find out at 1:30, I'm not going to make it for the start of the show.
Yeah, okay.
So they try to get people to come in, and I got tired as the producer of trying to teach these guys what the show was about and how we're trying to do things, because not every radio show is the same. We talk, like you said, we talk about other things, we go off the rails, you know, it's not always just talking sports. And sometimes people that come in to fill in don't understand that. They think we're just there to get real serious about sports for 3 hours.
Yep.
So I just got to the point where I just told the guys, I'm going to just start filling in when Stink is out because I'm tired of being, I can't teach everybody.
Right.
And half the time we can't find anybody anyway. If it's 1:30, we're on it too.
Right.
And so that's how I got to transition to an air personality. The Mammoth thing is interesting. I was, my first job with the Mammoth, I would call games from a booth. and it was for their website. This is in the very early 2000s, as everyone's just trying to get something on the website.
Yep.
And so I didn't have any cameras or anything fancy. I just simply put on a headset. Nobody talked to me. All they told me was, when the game is going on, look at the Jumbotron, and that's the feed we're putting on the internet. Call the game off that.
Okay.
So if I had to look at what I was referring to, it was what was ever on the Jumbotron.
Gotcha.
Then you shut up in breaks, and then you do it again. So that's how I got to know Mammoth people. So I did color for them, gosh, probably was from 2005 until about 2015. I was the color on their TV broadcast. And then in 2015, I got hired to do full-time Bronco travel as the sideline guy. I did the Broncos for 10 years, but I would only do the home games because Alan Roach was the PA voice.
Yep.
And then
okay. He'd
go on the road with the Broncos. It was like having the greatest season tickets ever, right?
Right.
But then in 2015, Roach quit the job altogether because he had bigger commitments to the NFL. So then I took on the full-time travel, did that for 3 years. So I quit the Mammoth. And then when I got fired from KOA in 2019 so they could bring Alfred Williams over because they needed my money to do that. So then I went to and got hooked up with Nate, did Altitude. So obviously, being inside the Kroenke family, the Mammoth asked, do you want to come on back?
Yeah.
And so I agreed to do that. We had to wait. I got the job, and then COVID hit. And so I got the job and couldn't call the games for 2 years. And then I've been doing it. I guess this is my fourth year now, if you can believe it. Got both championship seasons in, and then last year wasn't so good. So, but I've been with the team for like 18 years. I don't know.
That's awesome. I mean, that's way cool. I've definitely been, we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier. The shirt I'm wearing is from the beach night that the Mammoth did a couple weeks back. That was an awesome game. It was, I'm blanking on his name, but he got the sock trick, and it was, starts
You're
with
right.
a W.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember too. Why can I not remember? It wasn't Ryan Lee. I'm trying to, because we were given our sideline guy, John Gallant, stands between the benches for the TV broadcast because we're on ESPN Plus and Altitude, and he used to play for the Mammoth.
Okay.
And he'd never experienced, I don't know when the sock trick became a thing. I played lacrosse and coached lacrosse my whole life. Literally, since I was 15, I've been part of the game in some way.
Yeah.
And I don't know when throwing socks at six goals, but I remember I was doing an Outlaws. I was on the Denver Outlaws broadcast because, again, I was one of the few lacrosse players. I'd actually played the game in broadcasting and, you know, not being the most popular sport until probably the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
There weren't a lot of media guys that could say they actually played the game. So they'd always hire me with my Broncos connection to do the Outlaws. And that league was the MLL of Major League Lacrosse.
Yep.
So I did that for Fox Sports for a number of years. And that was the nastiest because they actually threw socks in the middle of July. It was hot. It was sticky.
I hope they're not pulling them off their feet to do
yes,
that.
Yes, they Oof. Were. And that's why I was like, why are they throwing their socks? And this is the most disgusting thing ever. And then Johnny got that.
Yep.
Was it Will Malcolm? I think Will Malcolm had the
yep,
sock
Yep, that's who
trick,
it was.
So.
Yeah, that's exactly who it was. So actually, I had to look it up because I wasn't sure on this. The sock trick is, I don't remember the exact story, but it was a Mammoth game that originated it.
That doesn't surprise
yep.
me.
So, just kind of a fun little piece of trivia. I'll have to figure out exactly what it is. I'll send you the story, because it was kind of cool to read, but I had to look it up when we were at the game. They're like, oh yeah, the sock trick. I'm like, all right, obviously hat trick forever, but what exactly did that originate from? So I had to look that up during intermission, I think, one of the breaks.
You'll have to send me the story, and then I'll read it. I'll read it on the broadcast because nobody knows. What's funny to me is we had three guys, so they just had a game this past weekend, which would have been the 11th, and like three or four players. We had one player get a sock trick from the other team.
Nice.
Ty Kurtz was his name.
Or not nice, rather. No,
well,
yeah.
It was all right because we ended up winning. Huge comeback.
Ooh,
our new
better.
Guy, Connor Kelly, was a goal away from a sock trick. We had like three guys with hat tricks, but nobody throws hats anymore, I guess, because
yep.
of the sock tricks. So.
Yeah, I've noticed that there doesn't seem to be any hats at any of the Mammoth games.
Yeah, which is, and I felt bad the night of that sock trick you were talking about. You might have
yeah.
noticed all the dancers had to put their surgical gloves
to
on.
Pick
they were not
up, yep.
psyched to go deal with that.
I can imagine not. Oh, goodness. Because I just assume like people brought like a spare pair or
you
something.
You would hope.
But, yeah, if they're pulling them off their feet, I wouldn't want to touch that
But it
either.
Was beach night, like you said.
Yep,
so half these people showed up, and now it was cold, if I remember
oh,
right.
Oh, man,
right?
When we were standing outside to try and get in, it wasn't terrible, but it definitely was not warm.
Now, was that Black Friday, do you remember?
No, that was...
That was December.
It was in December, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The 21st, maybe?
That sounds right.
Somewhere
it was right before Christmas. Because
yeah.
we had two games. We had one right before Christmas, then obviously right before New Year's.
Yeah.
So we actually had a pretty good crowd on Black Friday, too. I didn't think we would.
Did you? All right,
because
we
never
nice.
Played that early, but
yeah.
Yeah, they had over 10,000 people there. So.
Well, that's a heck of a showing out for that.
What got you interested in the Mammoth?
So I've been a big hockey fan for basically my whole life. And when I was a kid, I never actually got to go to any Avalanche games. It just wasn't something that we ever had, like, money or time
to
do.
Yeah, it's not cheap, right, to go to the NHL.
No, it is not. So I remember there was, like, some special, and it was four tickets, four hot dogs, and four sodas for a family to go. And I think it was, like, at that time it was, you know, $50 or something insane.
The family
like that.
Pack.
And so we're like, let's go check out the Mammoth. And I was like, this is absolutely wild. It's like, it's got enough elements of hockey that I could understand everything that was happening in the game. But then you see those guys just, you know, whacking the sticks and the backs of the legs. And it gets almost even a little more intense, a little more physical. And I was like, you know what? This is really fun to watch. I think I might kind of keep an eye on that moving forward.
Yeah. See, it's funny because I grew up playing field lacrosse. And so that's really the indoor. The Mammoth is a Canadian game. I tell people all the time. Because it's what you just described. It's another way for them in the off season, if you will, or whatever, to keep the hockey skills sharp.
Makes sense.
Because the games are so similar. It's basically, like you put out there, they play on hard floors. Like, go to Skate City. That's the floors they play on in Canada. I think they're nuts. But it's just hockey on feet, you know, instead of skates. But a lot of people seem to understand it. See, the field game, which is... I really do love the field, you know. I love box lacrosse too, but I'm starting to, you know, I've been around long enough, I get it. They're two, they definitely are very different sports for having the same name.
Yeah.
You know, field has got 10 players compared to the six, but there's just different rules. You're not allowed to just check the crap out of each other like they do in indoor, you know, basically set the block for each other. We have to set basketball style picks in the outdoor game or whatever, but people... If you go to a Mammoth game, you'll get it. You know, I've had even people, if you play any basketball, I've had a lot of basketball friends that see the similarities, too.
Yeah,
between
I can see
the
that.
Offenses, you know. So it's very easy, I think, for people
and
to
just,
get into.
Actually, I can totally see that, the way they're setting up to
kind
of pass
and the
back
doors,
and forth. And, absolutely.
You go to the hoop the same way.
But, yeah, so that's, I mean, Mammoth's definitely one that's been pretty awesome. I believe the trophy, the cup, just changed, right? They just made it a new...
Yeah, apparently it was. They called it the Champions Cup, and when we won it, I had nothing to do with it, but I was on the broadcast that year. You know, I got to see the trophy. Some of the players went and did a show with me at why can I not remember? The Tivoli Brewing Company.
Yep.
That's over there now. It just reopened, and so we went in there, and I was doing a show with them, and they wanted me to drink something out of it because it is enough of a cup you could drink out of, but I am not. I don't know why anybody drink. I'm not drinking out of any trophy. I don't care how elated I am. I guess I'm a bigger germaphobe.
Not a drink out of the Stanley Cup kind of guy.
No. I know what you all do.
Yeah, right. That's true.
I know your hygiene habits. I'm not sharing a cup with you.
I've heard a story of somebody in Denver who got to drink from the cup when the Avs won it in 22. And he said he ended up being sick for like a week afterwards.
Yeah, so, I'm not surprised. Yeah. Nobody tells that story,
though,
right?
No, nobody says
that.
They
put babies naked in the thing.
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I mean, you got to assume they wash it in between.
Hey, look,
but,
it goes into gentlemen's clubs. Again, I'm not drinking in it. I don't even get a beer at a gentleman. I don't go to a gentleman's club now. I'm too old. But even if I did, it's a bottled beer. That's it.
Right?
I'm watching you take the cap off, and that's all I'm touching.
Hand it to me, and that's it. Yep. Yeah, because. Geez, who was it that fell over with the cup in
it was
a club?
McDermott.
It was McDermott, yep.
Why can't I remember his first name? But yeah,
Curtis.
Curtis McDermott, the tough guy. That was hilarious. He
just
up
lifted
and went
up
and the tree
right
went down.
Over. Yep. Oh, man, that was crazy.
They put like three dents in that thing.
Yep. Oh, and yeah, with Kubel right off the bat.
Yeah.
Just still so awesome to watch him do that.
They
right
got to take it away from him. That's what the cup people were like, all right, all right, we're going to take it away from you. I guess they missed going to Vegas. They were going to go to Resorts World in Vegas.
Seriously.
And the cup guy, I think it was right after McDermott tipped over.
Dropped
they were
it.
Like, all right, we're going to go fix it. You can't have it for Vegas. You can then go later.
Oh, my gosh.
I think they went
hilarious.
Anyway without it, which, you know, it's got to be a bummer. You want to show everybody
right,
you're the champ.
Right, walk around with it. Yeah. That's hilarious. I did not know that that was the next piece there. So, well, now that I know you won't drink out of it, let's assume that you knew it was completely sterilized. What would be the drink that you would, like, what would be the celebratory drink you'd
The easiest one to find, I don't know. That's hard. That's a great question. I like that question. I've never even thought about this. Like, if I'm going bourbon, and again, I'm partial to the era of Stranahan's Rob Diedrich's days.
Yeah.
I love the Black Label Stranahan's Diamond Peak.
Oh, yeah. Excellent
my
choice.
My favorite bourbon in the world. That is my go-to. And I haven't tried what they got. You know, they're distilling them all in different bottle or barrels now to get it.
Yeah.
I think that one's distilled.
That's the blue label one. That is, it's Solera.
I like the Solera too, yep. But their new black one, I don't know. I've got a couple of Rob's old black Diamond Peak bottles that I still would hold on to. But if you're going to, how big a drink are you taking? Because I'm not slugging that big a.
No, not a ton.
Of any bourbon.
Like shot-ish size. Yeah, but, you know, it's something that I feel like it's got to be a really kind of special bottle.
If I'm doing beer, if I want to really get a good slug off that thing.
Yeah.
See, I'm a wheat beer guy.
Okay.
I love Polliner. You know, I don't know. I don't know if I'm just getting older. The wheat beer's giving me just the worst hangovers now. But
yeah.
I loved them. You know what? So I went to the Super Bowl 48, the one in New York.
Oof. The one we don't talk about.
Yeah, that one was rough. But they had a media party because there's a media party every Tuesday we all get to go to. And everybody in the media is cheap. And so we go to the free booze and food place. And that's the media party. So Shock Top used to make a chocolate wheat that drank like chocolate milk. Like, I'm telling you, I'd never had a beer. Now, again, it was probably, it drank so easy. I probably am a 2 to 3 beer guy max, and that's if it's a lighter beer. I've never been into the box or the sour or the bitters.
Yeah.
When I bartended at this Bennigan's, they decided they'd be old Chicago for a while, and we went to a beer tour of our own called the Copper Clover Club. And as the bartender there, I had to learn stories about all these different stupid beers that it was like. I was supposed to tell you that a black and tan came from the English wanted to keep their bass ale in some war. They were running out of their rations, so they started splitting it with the Guinness, and they hated the Guinness, but they wanted to keep, you know, it was a way to keep drink less of the bass at the same time. And did you know bass is supposed to be served at room temperature and all this stupid stuff. So I that's how I got into the wheat beers. But I'm telling you, this Shock Top, God, it drinks so good. Have you ever had, there was a Frambois. It was Lindeman's Frambois. Have you ever tried that? It's a lambic, I believe.
Real easy to drink those
ones.
Yeah,
that
sweet.
Wasn't bad either.
They're a little sweet for me, but they're definitely
you're
enjoyable.
Not having more than one. Well, they're also like $25 a bottle.
Yeah, so right. They're not cheap at all. But no, those are definitely good. We at the liquor store I used to work at, we sold a lot of that because they're really easy to drink. They were decent alcohol, and I mean, again, a little more pricey, but not terrible. And it's a solid way to kind of start off an evening.
Oh, and they look like wine, right?
Yep.
Like that's what threw me off is that we had to actually, I think at one point we actually had to uncork the thing. I might be wrong about that, but I remember you had to pop the beer top, then I think we had to get a little bit of a cork out of there the first time I served it.
Possible, yeah.
But I was like, this is not a beer. This is almost a wine.
Right?
You know?
Yeah. So, there was something I was going to say on that note. Oh, with the Shock Top, there's one that I can't find anymore, but it's pretzel wheat.
Yeah.
That is actually, I'm not a huge Shock Top fan for a lot of their stuff. That pretzel wheat, though, if we came across it, my wife will slam those because it tastes just like a pretzel. It's amazing.
I used to know a guy when I was working again with the Broncos. Bud was a big sponsor of a lot of the shows we do during the week, so I got to know a guy named Jeff there. He was awesome, and he would always give me the backstory because apparently Shock Top was one of the products that Bud would distribute.
Yeah.
And so he had told me that I was just so mad. I kept telling him, where's the chocolate wheat? Why don't you bring it back? Because it's supposed to be a winter release. And he just claimed it didn't sell well, which shocked me. But, I don't know. Maybe it may just have tasted too much like chocolate milk for people. But I don't know what the pretzel. He just said you'd be amazed at how many of those flavors don't fly more than one season.
Well, and the pretzel disappeared too. So, it came back briefly, but only in a sampler pack. So my wife and I went and bought, 2 or 3 sampler packs, took the pretzels out for ourselves, and then had the other ones for people who we knew would drink the Shock Tops that we just wouldn't touch.
Leave it out for everybody.
Yep, exactly. Like, here you go. You guys can have that when you come over. That sounds perfect.
Let me offer you this.
Exactly. Yep. Awesome. Well, Andy, it's been really great being able to talk to you. I know you've got kind of a little bit of a time crunch this afternoon. You got to go handle some more stuff for the Mammoth this evening. So we'll kind of start to wrap it up here. I think the sip out of the cup, if I'm going with that, I don't know that I'd want to do a beer. I think I'd want to go something that's, you know, more
champagne
whiskey.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, maybe a champagne. But I think I'd probably want to go with the whiskey. I'd probably want to keep it a Colorado one because, you know, that's the whole point of this show. So got to stick true to that. I might go with the Law's Origin series.
Okay.
They've got a 10-year release out of that that I got to try down at their tasting room, which was absolutely phenomenal. Or I might do Bear Creek. They've got a cask strength rum. And the one that they just released is a 5-year. And I'm not really typically a big Colorado rum guy. There's two now that are at the top of my list, and Bear Creek is one of them. That might actually be one that I'd want to throw out.
See, it's funny. I was going to bring that up earlier. That's the one distillery, and I'm not living too far from Bear Creek. I'm more closer to Ken Carl, but I need to. They're not actually in Bear Creek, though, right? That's the name. The distillery's downtown.
Yeah, they're right by Laws, actually, just a couple blocks south of Laws on South Broadway. So I definitely recommend checking them out.
I just think it's cool that this, like you said, the whole culture seems to be growing. And, you know, I don't know. I never thought of Colorado and whiskey, so I hope people will continue to think of Colorado and whiskey.
Yeah.
Because I like Knob Creek. I'm trying to think of some of the bigger brands. I like a Basil Hayden.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been a big Jim or Jack or...
There's a couple of them that I like, and Jim, honestly, for the price, is a pretty solid.
Sure,
like,
I don't mind Jim Black.
Yeah, exactly. But I agree, like, Colorado doesn't have quite as much of the recognition, at least outside of the state still. And even inside the state, I think there's a lot of opportunity for people to see just what we can produce here inside the state. What's awesome is when you go and talk to any of these distilleries, actually Stranahan's, a lot of them branched out from Stranahan's. So you get a lot of kind of, oh yeah, I started my career up there at Stranahan's and then moved over to here.
It's a bummer though, right? Because I guess, like, again, I still love Stranahan's and I partner with them again in a heartbeat, but people just keep telling me it's a little more corporate and a little less Colorado.
Yeah, they were purchased by Proximo Spirits, and so it is a little bit more. It's still Colorado made, so I'll give them, you know, still that benefit.
But the tasting room is fun, right off Alameda.
Tasting room's awesome, yeah.
So, and now they've got one up. Is it Aspen?
They might. Yeah, I'm not sure. Aspen, yeah, right. I don't head up that way. I got to talk to the 10th Mountain guys for an episode last year, and we went up to the distillery itself in Gypsum, and then the tasting room in Vail. And, like, even just walking around Vail Park, it was kind of summertime. Like, this might be a little too rich for my blood for more than this trip.
Yep. Yeah, oh, you don't want to, trust me, whenever we would play in that lacrosse tournament, which happens every year.
Yeah.
We were, I went and played my 40s about 8 years ago. What was it, about 8 years ago, 42, I still had a couple of roommates.
Yeah.
Because the lodging is not cheap. So.
Oh, yeah, nope, not at all, so... That's awesome, man. Well, again, thank you so much for taking the time out to sit down with me here. This has been awesome. The sports talk, everything. I mean, my wife tells me all the time, I might listen to too much sports radio. I'll come home and it's playing.
No, you don't.
Yeah, exactly.
You tell
right?
her no, you don't.
no, she's awesome. She doesn't mind it at all. But she always tells me, like, especially watching the games and stuff, she's like, why didn't you try to do this for a living?
And I was
like,
why didn't you?
Actually, I looked into it when I was leaving the retail job, but the guy that I talked to was the program manager for the Fan.
Yeah.
And he was like, look, where your life's situated, it's not going to work very well. You're going to need to be able to travel to a small market, live there at an entry-level spot for a while, and it's going to be a long time before you work yourself up to a solid spot.
Do you remember the name of who that was?
Raj.
Raj, yep. Yeah.
And... I appreciated his candor a ton, and I ended up moving into the IT world, which has worked out pretty well for me and allows me to do this. So, you know, that works out nicely too. But I still kind of sometimes think, like, man, that would be really fun to have pursued that. So,
well, maybe it's time for a sports podcast on the side.
Might look into that and partner up with somebody.
You got all the equipment. You got nicer equipment than some of the stuff we have at the station, so you're doing all right.
Yeah. Well, right now it's all a one-man show, so I don't have to buy for much else, and a lot of it's ended up discounted, except this was a wonderful gift from my wife is the computer to be able to run that, because she does support all of this being happening. So might look into it. Might be something that I... try to run on the side. We'll see. It could certainly be
fun.
Hey,
listen, we're all going to podcasts. If we're not careful, terrestrial radio, and I think they'll need to keep us around because obviously they'll talk Broncos or Avs or Nuggets at the national level.
Yep.
But, yeah, podcasting is really the way of the future. So.
Well, and I'll tell you what. So one more real quick anecdote, and then I'll let you get out of here. We went to the PWHL takeover yesterday, which Denver broke the record for attendance in the U.S. at that. And then immediately, as soon as that was put up on the screen, the whole stadium erupts into a "We want the cup" or "We want a team" chant. We want the cup, obviously, just being the same one, but we want a team. And I mean, it was loud and it was awesome. So, my wife and my daughter, if they would want to start it with me, and we get a PWHL team here in Denver, maybe that's the route we go. Get them, I'll produce, and they can talk women's hockey, cover the PWHL unofficially. Would be
that's
pretty
right.
Cool.
And
yep.
Maybe you find a quick sponsor that way, right?
Yeah, so. Exactly. Get something launched that way, because that was a fun game to be at too. That was a blast. So,
that's good. I mean, it sounds like it was a breath of fresh air from the 3 hours we spent at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Oh,
where nothing
goodness,
really
yeah.
Went right,
that
so.
Game happened during the Bronco game, so I had it on my phone, and then we're sitting there, and I'm not really watching. I'm periodically kind of checking the score, and I'm like, well, at least the women's hockey game is a lot more
yeah.
fun. Yeah.
You could have turned it off at the start of the fourth quarter and not missed
and
anything.
And not missed anything, so. Yep. So, awesome. Well, Andy, thank you again for joining me. Check him out. I think you've got, like, social medias, Instagram, Twitter,
yeah,
all that stuff.
Yeah, just Andy _ Lindahl, LINDAHL.
And then Altitude Sports Radio, of course. Check him out on there if you want to listen to him in the afternoons, which I highly recommend if you're not already doing. And then Mile High Bourbon, follow us on all the social medias, just at Mile High Bourbon. We're on every one you can think of except TikTok, because I just don't understand it.
Sounds like I'm going to be going away, so you're all right.
Yeah, so I guess that works out in my favor, yeah. So go ahead and follow us there. Check us out, milehighbourbon.com. Check out milehighbourbon.com/shop. You can purchase some of these glasses sitting right in front of you here, have them shipped right to your door. These two Andy's taken with him today because I've promised him glasses since we've been trying to schedule this, and finally we're able to make it happen and get a couple of glasses here, so... and then quick shout-out, thanks again to Centennial Cuts for being the sponsor of the podcast. Shout-out to Kickin' Ass Mountain Pizza up in Fairplay, and Roma Ransom, who does the intro-outro music, local Colorado band. Find them at Distilleries if you go check out 291. They play down there a lot. They play at Talnua, so check them out. Thank you, Roma Ransom, and yeah, looking forward to more episodes with everybody. And Andy, hopefully we can try some of those whiskeys here soon.
Yeah, let's do that.
Awesome.
And then we can get your reaction on here.
Yeah, exactly. Sounds good. Sweet. All right. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in, and we'll talk to y'all soon. Cheers.